Pep Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to a Monday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. And we think you're getting this before Monday, because to be honest, we're recording this Friday afternoon, but it's going to be the Monday pod. So if we drop it to you maybe late Saturday, maybe Sunday, whatever, still count it as the Monday pod. And then we'll come back on Tuesday with what probably will be a basketball reset, because the final transfer in happened for the basketball team, and that's kind of where things are right now. But Stephen Means and I are here, and we're talking now while it's fresh in our heads. We hope you guys went back and listened to the Friday morning podcast. We thought that was fun, Stephen. A draft with Ashley and Dan from the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. How did you think that went?
I mean, for me personally, I don't think it went all that well. I'd probably give myself a draft grade of like a C-, but overall enjoyment factor, I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was a different way. Sometimes it's fun, you know, to get some other perspectives on Ohio State, because you guys get to hear what Stephen and I have to think all the time. So thanks to Ashley and Dan for doing that. But this is back to nitty-gritty info right now about these Ohio State Buckeyes. On Friday, thanks to Jerry Emig and Mike Bassford of the Ohio State Sports Information Department, we talked to Mickey Marotti, strength and conditioning coach. I'm not sure when the last time was we talked to Mick.
Before COVID.
Before COVID. How about that? Pretty good. Always good to talk to Mickey Marotti. We talked to new offensive line coach Justin Fry. We talked to running backs coach Tony Alford. We talked to receivers coach Brian Hartline representing the offense. We talked to defensive coordinator Jim Knowles. And then we also got a little visit from Ryan Day at the end. So we're going to kind of go through that. And then, you know, there's people floating around the building. We got to be inside the building. They are tearing up the indoor turf of the indoor football field. So we saw them. There's no green. It's all white out there. We saw that. They had a nice sign to say, remembering Dwayne Haskins in the grill where the players eat. Nice little memory of Dwayne Haskins. That's where we were. We were sort of in there. Just, we got to hang out. Jim Knowles was there for like an hour. I mean, I think some people were like, we got a lot of time with these coaches, but then other people are floating around. You just talk, you get to talk a little bit. So we just gleaned. And I think we had a good time doing it, Stephen. So you and I are just going to go back and forth. What did you learn? What's something that our listeners here on Buckeye Talk care about? A boatload of texts went out. Ooh, was Friday a good day to be a texter? Day like that, Stephen, I don't get worried about overloading our text subscribers. It's a two-week free trial, $3.99 a month at 614-350-3315. Because I thought all the stuff that you and I were sending out was like, this is a player update. This is what a coach said about a player. This is personnel stuff of how this might break down. This is an injury thing. This is how a guy is going to be used. This is a depth chart indication. I thought we got a handle on lots of different stuff so that we don't feel bad about blowing up the texters, right?
Yeah, no, because there's days when there's probably only one text sends out, so it kind of evens itself out. But I do think days like today were peak sign up for the text moments, because you got a little bit of everything that you were looking, anything that you would have been looking for out of today, you got from the text.
So listen, everybody there's a lot of good people who cover Ohio State, but Stephen and I got some work done today. So Stephen was like, Stephen has a new best friend. Tony Alford and Stephen Means are just chopping it up for like an extra half an hour off to the side. So we got a handle on some things. I also found out this could be used to our advantage here on Buckeye Talk. And for you, the listeners, Jim Knowles and I do vacation at the same beach in New Jersey. And I have an indication of maybe when he'll be there. And is it beyond me to plan my summer vacation around when I might run into Jim Knowles getting a donut at breakfast at our favorite vacation spot? I'm not above that. And then Jim Knowles will be like, why did I tell this guy where I go on vacation? Jim, it's Doug from Ohio State. Yeah, what a coincidence. I'm standing outside the donut shop for 3 hours waiting for Jim Knowles to show up. He's like, I don't want to talk about defense today, Doug. I think about defense 51 weeks a year. 1 week a year, I think about donuts. Yet here you are. And then I'll text it out. Just saw Jim Knowles eating a donut. He told me to get lost. That's the kind of thing you might get on your phone this summer.
His family's like, do you know that guy? He's like, yeah, he's from work.
I don't know him.
I don't know him, but like, you know.
He thinks he knows me, but I don't know him. So we'll start with you, Stephen. Where do you want to go? What do you want to talk about? Now, listen, so Steph, we might lean receiver, running back, offensive line, defense here because we didn't talk to Corey Dennis. We didn't talk to Kevin Wilson. We didn't talk to Larry Johnson, Tim Walton, or Perry Eliano, right? But try to get big picture stuff. So what's the most interesting thing you want to begin with here on Buckeye Talk?
Yeah, let's start with some receiver talk. The obvious questions that, first of all, I love talking to Brian Hartline. I think Brian Hartline makes me a better question asker. Because in your head, you might think your question is going to get the most expansive answer in the world, and then he just like makes your question sound so stupid. And so sometimes it's just easier to be like, hey, this is a stupid question, but I don't know how else to ask it. He'll make fun of that too, but then he'll give you a good answer to it. Obviously, he got a lot of questions about the Ohio State receivers going back to back to back. Well, 2.5, I'll say 2.5 receiver going back to back to back with Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jameson Williams, and what that means for the program. And he dumbed that down. But I think the more interesting stuff that he talked about is a combination of what that does as a recruiting pitch combined with this new world of NIL, transfer portal, all this new stuff he's trying to navigate through. And through all that, the point I want to get to is, because I think Jameson Williams is a prime example of what he was saying, he doesn't think he's seen the transfer portal make a player yet. He thinks that all the portal does is just speed up somebody's clock for what they were going to be anyway. And you look at a guy like Jameson Williams, who the example is J-Mo was going to be a first-round wide receiver anyway. It's just that by transferring to Alabama, he got to be a first-round receiver in the 2022 draft instead of having to wait till next year.
So Brian Hartline thinks if Jameson Williams, if there wasn't a portal, if he had to sit out a year and Jameson Williams decided, well, I don't want to sit. I'll stay at Ohio State. Maybe he certainly would have played some in 2021, but now he'd be a starter in 2022. And Brian Hartline thinks he just would have done what he did at Alabama at Ohio State this year and then would have been in the draft next April.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of had this conversation before, the idea of maybe Ohio State just placed four receivers last year and Jackson Smith the Jigba forces his way into the situation. But Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson were going to be first-rounders no matter what because they were already established, while J-Mo wasn't. So he had to go somewhere else to establish that first-round presence that he now was. So maybe in 2021, this past year, he has 450 yards, which is good. It gets him on the radar, but it doesn't get him out the door in 3 years the way that most top 100 recruits want to be.
And that does make sense. I mean, that Jameson Williams, if he would have had to wait until his fourth year in college to really be a focal point of an offense, because he was a starter in 2020, but he certainly wasn't a focal point of what Ohio State did in a weird COVID year. So, you know what? I was only at Hartline came out first, just so people understand. That's where the players round. It's this second floor lounge in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. They just have tables out there. All the tables have an Ohio State logo on them. There's a pool table in there. The pool table has an Ohio State logo. The pool balls are all scarlet and gray. There's a window that overlooks the indoor facility, the indoor practice field. That's all torn up. There's no green turf there. They're replacing that. There's another window that overlooks the weight room, and you can see all the things they have in the weight room and the things on the wall, the big four things on the wall. It's just a reminder about developing for the NFL is a really important thing here. And we've been in the weight room before, but it's like there's four big things that are listed up on the wall in the weight room. The first one on the far left is first round picks. So every first round pick at Ohio State, you get your name up there in little small type. But then it's national championships, 8. Big Ten championships, 39. And then what was the third thing? No, the fourth thing on the other end. I can't even remember what it was now. But like that's how big of a deal that being a first-round pick in the NFL is. I actually wrote it down. I'll get it for later. But we got to oversee that. We got to oversee the field. We got to be in there and hang out a little bit. So Brian Hartline came out first, and I didn't want to like ask this question right away. Postseason appearances is the last thing. So that's like all the bowl games are listed here. So it's first round picks, national titles, Big Ten titles, postseason appearances. So I was only at Brian Hartline at the beginning because then you were going to stay with Hartline and then Justin Fry came out and I left to go to Justin Fry. But I would have asked Brian Hart, like, did he get any kind of question like this? Do they feel like they wish they had done something differently with Jameson Williams, or that there was something that they could have done better with Jameson Williams so that he would have either developed more in the time he was here and shown it on the field and played a large role in helping Ohio State win, or something they could have done to keep him here rather than losing him to Alabama? It comes across as like a blame question, and I didn't want to risk ticking Hartline off in minute two of what was going to be a 50-minute session, so I didn't ask it then. If I had been there in minute 46, I would have asked that. Did that kind of thing come up at all? And the answer might be no, there wasn't anything we'd change.
I think the concept of the questionings led down that road. It wasn't completely said, hey, was there anything you could have done to keep J-Mo? Just because I don't know if there is a way to ask him that question without ticking him off. But the concept of that idea of people, when you recruit at this high of a level, somebody's going to leave because they just would rather just go be the guy in another room instead of just being one of the guys in this room. And he addressed that in a way where it was like, everybody who comes through here thinks they're going to be a first round pick. And then you start realizing that, okay, maybe you're not going to be that in this room. Or the idea of, you know, showing patience and understanding that you might not get on the field the way you thought you should have gotten on the field as a true freshman or even as a sophomore, just stuff like that. And understanding that he said this a couple of times, everybody's destination is the same, but everybody's route to getting to that destination isn't the same. And when you get caught up in what somebody else's destination is, that's when, you know, guys end up leaving. Because this isn't going to be the last time there's a Jameson Williams story out there for Hartline. And I think he understands the way he was talking, he understands that. You can't bring in four top 100 guys every year and expect all four to stay in your room for 3 or 4 years. So there's that understanding of, you bring in the talent, you develop it as much as possible, but you understand that every so often a JMO is going to happen. And I think you live with that because there's nothing you can do about it.
Okay. There's probably some more receiver stuff we want to get to with some of the receivers on the current roster and that kind of thing. Yeah. But let's go to one that I think probably our listeners are wondering about. I was at Justin Fry for a while. Justin Fry's the second guy out. Then the third guy out is Jim Knowles. We had decided, you know, you and I talked about it beforehand. You were going to stay with Hartline. I had Knowles and Fry high on my list. Those are my three main guys. They're talking at the same time. I go over, I drop a recorder at Knowles. I come back to Fry because I had not really talked to Justin Fry that much. So I wanted to almost get like some FaceTime with Justin Fry. So I missed probably the first 20 minutes of Knowles. And when I got over there, I said, and this is how it works. They understand this. And there's no better way to do it because you can't just line up. We're going to have six guys and they're each going to get an hour and we're going to be there 6 hours total. There's got to be some overlap. So sometimes they get asked the same thing twice. But most of us try to say, hey, sorry, I wasn't here. If you've had this discussion for 8 minutes already, it's on my recorder. Just tell me. We already talked about it. So I said, have you been asked about Court Williams? And to me, it's like, what is happening with Court Williams? It's like, we were by the end of spring, we were very interested in that. He said, no, I haven't been asked about Court Williams yet. So then I said, what is happening with Court? And he said, why are you shouting like that? What is wrong with you? Please don't follow me on my vacation. So the deal with Court Williams is he just said that Court Williams was just dealing with an injury for a lot of spring. But he remains... It seems, this is Jim, I'm paraphrasing everything Jim Knowles said. He is right in the mix of the safety conversation. And then I said, this is, again, my style of questioning at this point in my life. This is what I think, is this right? So I said, it seems like Josh Proctor, Ronnie Hickman, and Court Williams are all bandits or adjusters. Those two real safety spots, meaning they wouldn't be in the mix at nickel.
Right.
Those three guys for those two spots. Is that right? Yes, that's right. Okay, that's three guys for two spots. What do you think about possibly rotating? And he said, you know, I said series to series or whatever it is. And he said, we have enough guys who are capable of doing it, I'm totally on board with something like that. So again, I've detailed over time how sometimes I get tired of coaches talking about how they're going to rotate when we know they're not going to rotate. But Jim Knowles is new here. He doesn't know all the platitudes. So he didn't say, oh, no, I really prefer to have two guys I can believe in there because safeties are so important. So to me, at the beginning of spring, we talked a lot about Court Williams. Then Court Williams, because of this injury, sort of, you know, faded into the background a bit. And everybody got very excited about Ronnie Hickman and Josh Proctor. Justifiably so. I think in the end, my conclusion from today, Stephen, is it is three guys for two spots. Safety is really important. Don't give up on Court Williams. I think when he's healthy, he's still right there. Would you bet right now? Now this is me more than Jim Knowles. Would you bet right now that the two starters against Notre Dame are Josh Proctor and Ronnie Hickman? Probably yes. But I would not give up on Court Williams. I would not be like panicked that Court Williams is going to wind up somewhere else or that there's not a spot for him here. I think there is. But I didn't follow up because there's so many things. I want to go 10 different directions with Jim Knowles. I don't almost want to ask the same thing. I didn't say Proctor at nickel, Proctor coverage nickel. I didn't go there. But we then did have a nickel conversation, which again was where Tanner McAllister and Cam Martinez are. And like the number one thing for that nickel safety spot is coverage ability on a slot receiver. Is that correct? That's the number one thing. Yes, that's the number one thing. So that to me, Stephen, gave some clarity on the Hickman, Proctor, Williams, where do they fit? What are their positions? It's three guys for two spots, but maybe there's a world where all three can play. Does that help? Was that helpful?
Yeah.
Slightly helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. For where we are in the spring, I think it's helpful. I'm going to throw a wrench in it just because why not? It's Buckeye talk. This is what we do. If the primary objective of the nickel is to cover slots, okay, that makes sense for Tanner McAllister and Cameron Martinez. I don't know. One, I don't know what Lathan Ransom's timetable is from a health standpoint, but let's just play the game that he's ready to go by the time fall camp starts. I don't know if his best skill set is covering slot receivers. So what does that mean in a situation where if we're going to say Josh Proctor and Ronnie Hickman are the starters, does that put – is Court Williams just going to be a bandit? I know you just got done talking about how that's interchangeable, but if you've got four guys you can trust back there plus a true freshman in Kai Stokes who's coming along, it almost feels like you're certain about who the starters are while the second team can get iffy, which I don't know if it's a – that might not even be a bad thing.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. This happens all the time on this podcast, and I think with teams in general. You go from not enough guys to too many guys very quickly.
Yeah.
And then you just as quickly go from too many guys to not enough guys. So at the moment, it's like, where's Court Williams going to play? And then let's get to week three where there's two guys at safety got abducted by aliens. And it's like, okay, well, Court Williams is going to play every snap, but who's the other guy going to be? So like we know that that happens. To me, the confirmation of, listen, when you have an injury as serious as Lathan Ransom, you're just kind of on the shelf until you're not,
right?
And like mentally, and then come back and take somebody's job. Good luck to you. But I do think at the moment, if you're saying, how are you envisioning who's going to play, who are going to be the 15 guys that are going to play for this Jim Knowles defense against Notre Dame, I do think it's okay to have Court Williams in that mix. Again, as many snaps as Hickman and Proctor, I don't know. Maybe it sounds like not no, but I think something more than a straight second teamer who only plays when somebody needs to tie their shoelace. I think Court Williams could have a role beyond that. Is it a pure three guys for two spots, constant rotation? I don't know. But don't give up on Court Williams, I think is the message here, which I think that message by the end of spring football, when he didn't play in the spring game and the last couple of times we were there, we didn't see him doing anything, certainly got muddied a little bit. We weren't exactly sure what to make of what's happening with Court Williams. So it's just he was dealing with some injuries, and boy, Proctor and Hickman look good, but there's still a spot for Court Williams here. I thought that was on front, that was front of mind for me of trying to like of all the guys you're trying to address. So we wanted to make sure we covered that. We'll cover more with what Stephen and I learned talking to Ohio State football coaches next on Buckeye Talk. Doug and Steven back. Of course, you can listen to our Orange and Brown Talk podcast if you care about the NFL at all. We have that crossover episode on Friday. You certainly can listen to the College Football Survivor Show because that's all college. That's me. That's Shahan J. Haraja. We do an Apple podcast show every week. We do a free show every week for everybody. The most recent one was the four greatest quarterbacks in the history of the eight-year college football playoff. Who are they? It was the fifth time we had done a Mount Rushmore positionally for the playoff. We had done running backs, receivers, defensive backs, and linebackers. Those were all on the bonus episode available on Apple Podcasts. This one was on the main episode. And then ahead, we'll do edge rushers. We'll do assistant coaches, which I think will be fun. We'll do head coaches. Then we will do our overall playoff Mount Rushmore right now. Of course, we got this idea from Buckeye Talk, where we had done positional Mount Rushmores for the Buckeyes last summer, I think. Steven, what is the next thing? But no Mount Rushmores here. This is nitty-gritty football talk. Someone came over to us, and like after Steven and Tony Alford were hanging out forever, and I was just talking to Jim Knowles about football and vacation spots, and he was just like, "You guys, you look so happy." We just like, this is just what we want to do. Let's talk some ball, man. Let's just talk ball. And I do think at some point, Steven, do we annoy coaches and players as media members? Maybe not you and I specifically, maybe me specifically, but general media. At times, certainly, yes. If we're just hanging out, talking some ball, maybe talking a little bit of something else, a little bit of life or whatever, I don't think they're that annoyed by that. And I think if you can get it rolling a little bit, it can actually be kind of fun, because you know what they like? Ball. They like ball.
I think you can annoy them when you ask questions where it's very clear you're just trying to get a quote. Because then they're just – nobody likes to feel like they're being used, even if they're being used, you know? Mm. So that when it's stuff like that, then it's annoying. These football players and coaches will sit there and talk ball with you forever. That's – easy, because it's what they do for a living. But even there's a part of, and to get into, we're going to go into running backs next. I just like how we're doing this back and forth from defense to offense thing right now. There are some questions that we have to ask as journalists that we know are going to annoy the person we're asking. And we almost preface it that way sometimes, but it's our job and we have to ask it. So when I first got over to Tony Alford, one of the first things that I asked him after I asked him J.K. Dobbins stuff was, I was like, I know this is going to be an annoying question. I know you're not going to know the answer to it, and you're not going to give me one, but I have to ask it. No, and before I even said that, he went, but you're going to ask me anyway. I'm like, yeah, I have to. It's my job here. He's like, you're going to ask me about carry distribution, aren't you? I'm like, I am going to ask you about carry distribution. You just kind of know this. But I'm going to dress it up so it doesn't sound like I'm asking you about carry distribution. And we actually ended up having a really good conversation about it. He doesn't know a number. Here's the deal. Trayvon Henderson is the top dog, and whatever happens, happens behind him. But the way Tony Alford wants to approach running backs, this situation, one, he thinks all three are going to play. And he kept pounding that into my head, even during our hour-long conversation after. All three of these guys are going to play this year. And he kind of mapped out why. He treats it like MLB treats starting pitchers. You're not just going to have a guy out there just for the sake of having a guy out there. So when I brought up the J.K. Dobbins stuff, where it's like he said there was during the Rutgers game, J.K. only played in a half. And I was like, yeah, that's because you guys were blowing him out by 40. And then he had like 30 carries against Penn State. And he's like, that's exactly why we pulled him against Rutgers. It's the same logic every single year. Yes, Trayvon Henderson is your guy, but against Toledo, there's no reason whatsoever for him to have more than six carries, because it's Toledo. So why not give those carries to Evan Pryor and Mayan Williams and get those guys going? Because then there is going to be a game against a Wisconsin or against a Penn State down the road where you might need to have Trayvon Henderson go for 30 carries and 30 plus carries. That's going to happen at some point, but you don't want to waste that early in the season. And so that's what he means when he says all these guys are going to play. But then also there's an element of this that is, let's just say Evan Pryor goes out there for a series and he gets it four times and he goes 28 yards. You're going to sit him? No, he's hot. So you're just going to roll the hot hand there. So there is a balance to this, and it's why he gets annoyed by the, what's the ideal breakdown if you run the ball 40 times a game? Is somebody getting 20 and the other two getting 10 apiece? It's not necessarily like that. Is it worth giving the ball to Trayvon Henderson 15 times against Rutgers when you know you can win if he only carries it seven times?
It is interesting. And like that starting pitcher comparison is even interesting, because 10 years ago, starting pitchers went seven innings. And now starting pitchers go four and a third, because they figured out some teams have six-man rotations now. Nobody's throwing 240 innings a year anymore. There's been an evolution of how do you keep arms healthy? How do you keep extend guys' careers? How do you keep a fresher pitcher out there where the middle reliever is not as good as the starter, but a fresh middle reliever might be better than a tiring starter. And we're seeing that more and more with the evolution of the running back position. And again, the world where, hey, you know, this guy got it 27 times every single game, we're just getting a little bit further and further away from that world. Usually, to me, every conversation about running back carries is in a good game, in a tight game, in a game that matters against a good opponent. But the idea, but the clarification of, hey, you literally might play a quarter when we're winning by a bunch. I do think that matters. And the idea of getting a young guy who is not gigantic. He's not little. Trevion is built, but he's not Derrick Henry, and you want to get him to January, man. So I do think all that conversation matters, and that conversation is important. I'll go somewhere. This is just sort of talking a little bit. This wasn't specific to anything, but it was some confirmation of the idea that this young defensive line for Ohio State might be really, really good, and there's a possibility that these second-year guys are just kind of the dudes. And it doesn't mean the older guys aren't important and aren't going to play. But when we talk JT Tumaloa out, Jack Sawyer, Tyleek Williams, Mike Hall, Ty Hamilton, those guys are all the same recruiting class, right? They're all coming into their second seasons in the program.
Yep.
And there might be a world where when you really get down to business, like that might be where it's at. So, yeah, I mean, Zach Harrison, good. Teron Vincent, good. You know, Tyler Friday and JJB, and there's plenty of older guys around here. Jaron Cage, we get it. We understand. But this class, this second-year group, Stephen, could be a group that people remember, and they might be here now. They might be ready now. They might have looked this spring like, yikes, those might be the dudes that we are really going to lean on, even though there's a lot of good veterans here. Not a shock, but interesting to sort of get that vibe a little bit after today.
Yeah, I asked Mick Marotti about JT specifically because of his timetable, and the way our preferences was, how like caught off guard were you that he was ready to play football, let alone be good, but like he was playing football? And he said, yeah, that's like an outlier. That almost as if like that should not have happened at all. We were right to assume that maybe this was just a development year for JT and let's reset in the spring. And then it's like the Jack and JT show that pushed everybody's expectations for him kind of through the roof a little bit, because, and he credited his background. He's come from a family of coaches. His father had him really ready to go, but still to show up mid July and you're the starting defensive end against Oregon, some of that because guys were injured, but you're a starter 2-3 games into the season. That was not the expectation for JT at all. And so that raises the expectation. I agree that those four, it's 3rd and 7 in the fourth quarter, and you need to stop. Those might be the four on the field. The question is going to be, and we didn't get Larry Johnson today, which is unfortunate. He's out recruiting and doing whatnot. How quickly does Larry want to get there? Because there can be a sense of, this is not us doubting Zach Harrison as a football player. He is an NFL football player, for sure. But like, this is Ohio State. We're used to Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Chase Youngs. So if you feel like you might have a Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Chase Young on your team, and like one of them is ready to pop now as a sophomore, put that guy on the field. Because you know what was so great about Chase Young? That he had 10 sacks as a sophomore and then he had 16 and a half as a junior. You got 2 years of that. You got 2 years of Joey Bosa. Now, you didn't get those years of Nick Bosa because you were rotating him and then he got hurt in 2018. But if you can get multiple years out of a potential top five NFL draft pick, you have to get to that as quickly as possible. So that's really the question. If everybody in that building feels like those four are ready, but especially like JT and Jack, just because they're edge rushers and that's what this place is known for, is Larry going to let him loose?
Yeah. No, that's real. That's real. It's a constant discussion at every major program. You know, you guys know we've talked about a lot here on Buckeye Talk. What do you do when you have good veterans and potentially great young guys? Getting a little specific on the defensive line stuff, because again, I was trying to drill down with Jim Knowles as much as I could. Asked about Zach Harrison. I said, it seems like to us, is this right? And again, I'm repeating a lot of things he said at the podium in the course of the spring. But if I'm sitting at the table with you and it's like, okay, this is based on what you've said to the group, now it's us. Okay, is this right? Just said, it seems like Jack Sawyer, fits the Jack edge spot, and JT Tuimoloa sort of fits the other traditional defensive end spot. And then maybe Zach Harrison is kind of in between, or maybe could do both. Does that seem right? And he was like, listen, man, I can't tell you guys all this stuff. He said, if you want to go get a cigar and sit and talk off the record, we can talk about that. And I was like, please, can you tell me when we can do that? But yes, just like the general idea of he wants to keep people guessing a little bit, but he does think Zach Harrison can do some Jack things. He said he has not, they didn't ask him to do much this spring, but he does think that's possible. But again, generally speaking, Jack is the Jack and JT is not. And then, because the hard thing is to me, because, and I, again, I didn't follow up specifically on this because I wanted to get to the 12 other topics. Like, if Zach Harrison isn't, because I said, could Zach Harrison play some tackle? And he was like, well, that's kind of up to Larry Johnson, but I don't know. And again, Rushman package, maybe. And that could be an opportunity. Do we all think that on third and eight, actually, we might see Zach Harrison, JT Tuimoloa, and Jack Sawyer on the field together? Well, they've been doing that for years. That's not a wrinkle. That's definitely possible. But generally speaking, it's just a little bit hard for me. If Zach Harrison's not doing any Jack, then he just plays the same position as JT Tuimoloa. And then what do you do? And if he's not going to play any tackle on first or second down, then what do you do? Then you just have JT and Zach at the same position at one spot, and that's it. And everybody's thinking to themselves, if there's one guy on this team who might be ready to explode on the defensive side of the ball into an All-American, it's the guy who plays the same position as Zach Harrison, then what do you do with Zach Harrison? That's where I am on this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get Zach Harrison on the field for the snaps. Not me. People know I'm hyperbolic. Zach Harrison doesn't need me doing anything. I'm just curious about how you get Zach Harrison on the field for the number of snaps that, to me, it feels like he deserves, has earned, should get to help this team win if he only plays the same position as JT Tuimoloa. That's where I am, and that's why I keep trying to figure out what else can Zach Harrison do. So that's just where my head is at, but maybe it's just you have two excellent guys at one spot and you can save reps on their bodies, and that's not a problem. But like, do you understand it sort of?
Yeah.
Because if Zach is sort of like not a backup, but again, if you're thinking three guys for two spots, well, Zach can play a little bit with Jack. Zach can play a little bit with JT. He can do either. I think you open up that world a little bit more than if it's just two guys for one spot.
Yeah, the simple version of that question that's not going to get an answer, at least on the record, is if JT is on the field, is Zach not? And if Zach is on the field, is JT not? And we're going to find that out September 3rd. That's the only way we find out that question. I don't even know what the answer to that question is. It's maybe we're overthinking it, but there is an element to this of like how we've talked about the Jack in the past. They don't need the Jack every single game. So sometimes it might just be like you've got two traditional defensive linemen out there and like, hey, Jack, just put your hand in the dirt.
Or that,
unless it's third down.
That Zach and JT are on the field together and neither of them's playing the Jack because there isn't a Jack right now. There's just two traditional defensive ends and we're not looking for either of them to be moving around and standing over the guard or floating or dropping in coverage. That's not what we're asking of them. So, and then the other specific defensive line thing that I asked Jim Knowles was we were having a couple, you know, Tim May was there and he was asking some good questions. Dave Biddle, we were just talking about what sort of they look for in defensive tackles and that Tyleek Williams is a guy. This is what Dave Biddle asked, that just, you know, there hasn't been a guy like Tyleek Williams necessarily at his size at Ohio State for a while. Traditionally, the Ohio State defensive tackles aren't quite as big as Tyleek, which led us into, hey, you know, and then Tim was saying, those gigantic athletic defensive tackles, they're as they hard to find in recruiting as quarterbacks are. And it was like, yeah, they're rare. And it's like, oh, those Georgia guys, you know, Devontae Wyatt and Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis, they're hard to find. And Knowles said, traditionally, I've liked smaller defensive tackles because Knowles said he thinks your quickness, your first step, that matters more than your size. He'd rather have a quick first step diet than a big space eater because he thinks that can be more disruptive. That if I have a quick first step and I'm in the backfield, I'd rather have a 290-pounder who can do that than a 340-pounder who can't. But I said, well, then what if you have a guy who has both, who is gigantic and has a quick first step, which is what those Georgia guys had this year. They had three defensive tackles who had that. And then he said, well, that changes your whole defense. Because now you know every snap, that guy's going to have to be double teamed. And then you game plan everything else off the fact that it starts with a double on him, and now what? Because he is too big and too quick and athletic to not double. So that's a game changer, and they are hard to find, which then leads to, could Tyleek Williams be a guy like that? And the answer is, he could. So it's like a winding, it's not necessarily what Knowles has had or looked for. He doesn't feel like he needs a guy like that, but the obsession with gigantic athletic defensive tackles, are they game changers? Yes, they're game changers. Could Tyleek Williams be one? Maybe he can.
We've had this conversation, and I'm pretty sure you asked Knowles questions about it. Maybe this leads us down that road of what does a guy like Jim Knowles do now that he's got this level of talent? I think the Tyleek Williams part of it is the most intriguing part, because everything else is just like, hey, what happens when you have better players? You just simplify things. With the Tyleek Williams conversation, it's, hey, you have a guy who might command a double team on every single snap. What does that do for you as a brain? For the defensive coordinator who has said it, he wants to, you know, play offense on defense. When you have when you know that every single snap there's a guy out there, well, not every single snap because he's an interior defensive lineman, and you know, that's not realistic unless you're Aaron Donald to play 75 snaps a game. When you have a guy out there on the field who you know the offense has to double team, does that get your creative juices flowing even more, or does it make you want to simplify even more than it is like, hey, you've got a bunch of 5 and 4 stars all over the place?
So we did have that conversation.
Hey.
Because it is, again, it's something that I have been obsessed with all spring. Yeah. And Marcus Hartman from the Dayton Daily News, who's a guy, Marcus has been around forever, and I always like talking football with him. He's a really sharp football mind. We wound up having this conversation sort of together with Knowles. And I had reference, for instance, Joe Tiller and the spread offense that he brought to Purdue at that time was something, it was sort of to elevate Purdue's offensive talent and to let Purdue do something that it couldn't do just off raw ability. And as Marcus then called it, he said it was like an underdog offense. But then now you're in a world where everybody runs that offense and the overdogs run that kind of offense and get people in space. And it's no longer, you take the underdog offense and you put 5 stars and have them run it. And guess what? Still works. So Marcus is the one who used that phrase, that underdog offense, asking sort of, was your style of defense at Oklahoma State kind of an underdog defense? That I'm going to do the things I do. I'm going to disguise coverages. I'm going to have a jack that moves around. I'm going to try to be aggressive. I'm going to dictate to the offense rather than be dictated to. Is that because it's like an underdog defense and you're trying to make up for it, that you're trying to elevate? And the phrase I was using was elevating your talent rather than putting the talent you have in the best position for them to be successful, right? That you're, my talent maybe isn't quite good enough. And I referenced to Jim, hey, I know you had a great defense last year. Nobody off that defense got drafted higher than the 6th round in the draft. And I said, I know you think Malcolm Rodriguez is as good of a defensive player as you can find. He was a 6th round pick. Mm-hmm. And like, there's a lot of guys, you're going to have more than 6th round picks here. And this was the point that Knowles made that was clarifying for me. He said, it's not about being an underdog defense where I'm trying to elevate our talent. It's about, I'm trying to keep the offense off balance. So what I do as a schemer is not a reflection of who's on the defense, it's a reflection of what the offense is trying to do. So that idea, it's not based on what I have. It's just, I think I have to do that the way offenses have evolved. So now, give me better talent. Awesome. We're going to make it even harder on offenses then. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to change this. And Knowles did start off by saying, hey, listen, you grow, you evolve. I don't ever want to be exactly the same as I go from place to place to place. You have to learn, you have to grow. But then I said, you know, so now in the end, do you think to yourself, hey, because I have all this talent and they've had this before, I really have to change? And he said, I hope not. So it's sort of like, this is what got me here. We're going to do this. But it helped me, Stephen, because I had gotten a little obsessed with the idea of, are you sure you want to move Chase Young around? Don't you just want to let Chase Young be Chase Young? And his idea to that, and I had asked him that 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it's more, but more generally, it's, yeah, we have great talent, but the offense still has an edge because everything about the rules, everything about the game gives them the offensive edge. And I have to scheme like this regardless. So he's going to scheme the same way. So there is going to be a jack. There is going to be disguise coverages, but it's not going to limit, in his mind, the skill and natural talent of the Ohio State defenders. It's just going to continue to do what he's always done, which is put his guys in a position to dictate to offenses in a world where if you sit back, offenses will tear you apart. So that helped me, Stephen, that it's more about fighting the offenses than who you have in your 11 as a defensive coordinator. You know what I mean? Does that help? Did it help? Did it help?
It did. And to be honest with you, I like hearing that.
Yeah.
Because the opposite of that is the almost, yeah, I have more talent so I can keep things more simple, which is fine until like teams are out scheming, until Oregon is out scheming you and working you for 60 minutes. And so I kind of do like that. The talent is better, but I'm still going to keep doing what I'm doing. It should just work more often now. That's almost a mindset there because the players who are executing it are better. You know, there's going to be less breakdowns, ideally, is what you're thinking about in that situation. Because that the problem has not necessarily been the talent the last few years. Well, some of it is the talent. You lost Josh Proctor in the back end of your defense. But it's also been the scheme was so simple that everybody could scheme for it.
Yes.
So I like the fact that just because I'm in a bigger house doesn't mean I'm going to, you know, work any less at keeping the house together and keeping it built, right? You know, keeping it nice. No, I'm going to do the exact same thing I was doing in the other house. It's just now I'm in a nicer house. So when I vacuum the floor, it's a little bit nicer.
Because I do, it's why do you do what you do? It's because of the offenses. And so then we're getting a little bit of like the schemer stuff. And it's like, I said, are you like, do you have moments? So it's like, okay, I'm in my office. Here we are. I'm going to scheme. Or are you one of those guys that like there's stuff in your head all the time and you're in the shower and you're on the treadmill and defensive ideas come to you. He's like, I can't turn it off. I think about it constantly. And he said, and then, you know, when I wrote one of the bigger things I've written about Ryan Day, like the first year was a head coach and I was in his office and there's just doodles everywhere. And it's just like Ryan Day just doodles plays every minute of the day. He can't turn it off. And that Knowles has talked about, he talked about on Friday that like they connect on that level. And I said, are all coaches like that? Because listen, you're football guys. Like, you're all like that? He's like, not everybody. He's like, obviously a lot of guys are, but not all of them are. And then I do think Jim Knowles and Ryan Day have a relationship on, I'm constantly thinking about the thing I do, which is trying to out-scheme you. And Knowles said, makes for fun practice. But I do think they're different enough. Yeah, they're Boston and Philly, man. Come on, Boston and Philly people, they want to fight each other. But I think probably what draws them together, and as much as Ryan Day has become a culture guy and a leadership guy and mental health awareness and all the things, at his heart, Ryan Day is a doodler and a schemer. And at his heart, Jim Knowles is a doodler and a schemer, and they connect that way, I think.
And I think this hire, I think he knows that now. Mm-hmm. I don't think he and Kerry were ever going to, because Kerry's not a schemer. Kerry, I'm not saying Urban Meyer didn't have good schemes, but that's not what he was known for. That's not the type of, I don't know if that's the hat you would put him in as a head coach, as like an X's and O's guy first. You probably would put him in the motivator hat first.
And listen, we're not saying Jim Knowles isn't a good recruiter.
No.
I don't think Jim Knowles can recruit like Kerry Combs can.
Kerry Combs
into any house in America and walk out of there and think, I think we might have just got that kid because Kerry Combs is Kerry Combs.
Yes.
So everybody has strengths, but I do think I agree with you. What is the strength?
Yes.
Jim Knowles' strength, as we thought when he got here, but it's being reinforced,
is
doodler schemer. And guess what? The offensive guy is a doodler schemer too.
So it works in a world where like your head coach is very much still – only on his side of expertise, it works out perfectly. Like he said, he was looking for a head coach of the defense, which means he needs a Ryan Day on that who grew up in the defensive world because he grew up in the offensive world. And so this might click. And I think it was clicking with Jeff Hafley too. He just left after a year.
And I do think that, again, how can Ryan let that go? You let it go because it's like, that guy's just like me. That guy thinks just like me. He sees the game in a mirror image just like me, which allows me to say I can let it go. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's again, we're reinforcing kind of what we thought, but I think we're getting a better understanding of what we thought about this team. We'll take a last quick break, come back. What else did we learn talking to Ohio State assistant coaches on Friday, next on Buckeye Talk? All right, Stephen Means, where would you like to head next? Is there something else that you wanted to cover that we haven't gotten to talk about yet?
Let's do some offensive line stuff, and then we can wrap up with some of this, you know, leadership CJ Stroud style talk. Justin Fry wasn't great. He's already in head coaching mode the way he answers questions. I think my biggest takeaway from him was more just newsy stuff. He expects them everybody to be fully healthy by the time we get to fall camp, which is basically just a Josh Fryer conversation at this point, along with Enoch Vamahi being their 6th and 7th offensive lineman, whatever order you want to put him in. I asked Donovan Jackson this question. I wanted to ask Justin Fry too, just like, is there that much of a difference between playing left guard and playing right guard and why you would put a guy here versus there? And he's just like, no, it's just like technique, left brain versus right brain. So it just basically came down to reinforcing what Kevin Wilson said of Donovan Jackson as their second string left tackle or something if Paris Johnson gets abducted by aliens. But other than that, I think he wasn't – he's in head coaching mode, so he answers questions in kind of vague way a lot of the times.
It's hard because like his top five is so established, and the second five is so unestablished that it's hard to get nitty-gritty stuff. I was there for a long time with Justin Fry. Again, some Donovan Jackson stuff, just I was trying to say, how do you decide whether a guy is a tackle or a guard as you're trying to evaluate it? Is there a certain wingspan, a certain height that you need to have? And he was like, you know, the wingspan is a big deal because if your arms aren't long enough, he kept saying that to be a tackle, you have to play in space. You have to play in space, play in space. And play in spaces, you've got to make those edge rushers go a long way to get around you, right? Or also make sure you don't get beat inside. And that's where his wingspan comes into play. You can't reach. I think Paris was talking about that. Sometimes when you get out to tackle, you're in, and you do have long arms, you're like, I'll just reach to that guy. So, well, you got to slide to the guy and then get your arms on him. But, you know, 6'6 is ideally the thing, but then Justin Fry was like, I played with a guy who was 6'3 who had long arms who got drafted to the NFL. So they know, you guys listening know what a tackle is. They know what a tackle is. There are some exceptions to the rule, but yes, could Donovan Jackson be a tackle someday? Yes, I think he could. I think we're getting that impression, Stephen, that not right now, but maybe later. They love him. And the one thing Justin Fry said, he thinks year one, and we've talked about this, year one for offensive linemen, you just have to assume, is not going to happen. Because he said year one is about learning how to be a football player in college. For offensive linemen, year one is just learning football. And then year two is learning how to be an offensive lineman. So like learning to be a football player, that's all that stuff. That's weight room. That's nutrition. That's toughness. That's grind it out. And then you can get to footwork and hand fighting and using your eyes and all that stuff. But you got to get strong and big first. So that's the reality of that. And so like Donovan Jackson, but think about Donovan Jackson. Donovan Jackson's on that path. So we had a little bit of a role last year, but to Justin Fry wasn't here, but that's just Donovan Jackson learning how to be a football player. Now we get down to business. Now we get down to how do you be a really good offensive lineman? But not, I didn't think there was a ton to learn. Like I didn't, again, it's not, Justin's group is just not quite as tidbitty, which is fine, but he's also, you know, he just locked eye. I said, oh, you got 3 offensive linemen in the class. You're done recruiting. You can just relax for now. And he said, recruiting, of course, I was kidding. Sometimes I like to say dumb things to see what people say, as anyone listening to this podcast knows. And he said, recruiting's like brushing your teeth. You got to do it every day.
Yeah.
And then I was going to say, you have to brush your teeth every day. But I was like, this guy doesn't know me that well yet. Maybe you better chill out, Doug. So, you know, Paris Johnson, really good, making the adjustment. DeJuan Jones, really good. Luke Whippler, you know, student of the game. Donovan, nothing we didn't really know before, Stephen, sort of with how they're doing. But by the way, they're in pretty good shape, as we covered on the Thursday pod, with their offensive line recruiting. But he can't talk specifics of recruiting.
Starting offensive line has now become – not the depth is an issue, and we'll continue to discuss that. But the starting unit is boring to talk about. Because it is what we know what it is. Because even with, we know who the starting quarterback is, who the starting running back is, who the best receiver is, but there's still interesting things to ask about those guys. It's just like, we know what the starting unit is. As long as nobody gets hurt, they're fine.
And but like there's 2 5 stars in that group who have never played the position they're going to play this year in a college football game before. So it's like, hey, does everybody think Paris Johnson and Donovan Jackson are going to be great? Yes, everybody does. Do we know for sure? No, we've never seen them play a single snap at the position they're going to play this year. So we're all in wait and see mode.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like pretty certain in what we think. Wait,
the best possible wait and see mode you could be in.
But at some point, like when you keep asking the offensive line coach, hey, aren't they good? He's like, well, yeah, they're good. They are. They're very good. But they've also never done it. But they're very good. So once they start doing it, because then once you're good and you're showing it, then like we've done with CJ Stroud, then you're no longer talking about, do you think they will be good? Now we have proof. They are good. Now you're on to why are they good?
Yes.
Now let's talk about feet and smarts and toughness and the way Paris and Donovan work together and pass guys off. And now we'll be in business. But at the moment, we've almost gone as far as we can go with, are they supremely gifted young players? No doubt about it. Let's see what happens against Notre Dame. So that's where we are. So not a ton to learn on the offensive line from that point of view. You were at Mickey Marotti. Again, we had not talked to Mickey Marotti in a while. I did want to ask this because I was thinking to myself, have we ever asked Mickey Marotti this? And we might have. I can't remember. But I think it was 2 years ago, the Alabama strength and conditioning coach left and went to Georgia to be the special teams coach. It was strength and conditioning guy becoming one of the 10 assistants. And so I just wanted to say, I said, Mick, have you ever in your career considered, did you want to be a position coach? And he was like, never. No. And he was like, because I feel like I can have a bigger impact where I can get my hands on everybody rather than just the guy in my position. Because, and I do think by this point, Stephen, everybody knows that. You're the head coach of the offseason. So, and as we know, especially if it came up with Urban Meyer, it's like Mickey Marotti was like the second most important coach on that staff. Urban Meyer was one. Mickey Marotti was two. If you said to Urban Meyer, you've got to fire everybody but one guy, would have kept Mickey Marotti because he's the head coach of the offseason. So it's like, if you're the head coach of the offseason, do you want to be the head coach of the offseason or do you want to be an assistant of the whole year? He's like, I'll be the head coach of the offseason because he doesn't vanish when the season starts. So I just wanted to ask him that. I wanted to see how he answered it, but I couldn't even get it out before he was like, no, never one time in my life. It feels like he likes it. He likes Ryan Day. He likes this program. He's like an assistant athletic director now. He's above being an assistant coach. I'm sure he makes a ton of cash, but I think he likes his job. He's going to be here, I think, for the duration. What did we learn? One of your priorities, Stephen, was these off-season squads, right? Like trying to figure out who were the leaders. What'd you learn about that?
CJ Stroud was one of the leaders. It was 12 squads. CJ was a leader of one, which was a good thing, which led them to a discussion about leadership with CJ Stroud and some of that stuff we can get into as well. And then I followed up with, are we allowed to know the names of the other squad members? And he basically said, well, if Ryan Day hasn't told you by now, then I guess you're not allowed to know. And it's like, okay, that's a quality answer to that question. And then I asked, I know you guys were doing a lot of, they were doing a lot of different competitions through all this. They'd have days where they play dodgeball and basketball and all the stuff that they do on Friday practices. It's like the most fun, best Friday practice in sports is what they labeled it or something like that. And I said, were you guys keeping score with all of that stuff? And he said, yeah, everything's a competition, yada, 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 yada. And I was like, so who won? And he said, squad 10 won. And I said, I tried to trick him into like, is that CJ's? He's like, no. He said, so who's the leader of that one? He says, I'm not going. And then he just didn't go down that path with me anymore. So we're still working to get the leaders of some of these squads. I know a couple of them already. I know CJ Stroud was for sure a leader of one of the squads. But as Ryan Day talked about the first time we got him for spring football, they've put a lot of leadership stuff in place just based on how last season kind of went. A lot of weird stuff. Obviously, you had a guy quit in the middle of a game and throw his equipment into the stands. Guys transferring before the season was over. You lose to Michigan. And of course, there was a lot of questions about the toughness and the strength and conditioning program. He said everybody had to look in the mirror after that loss to Michigan and how it kind of played out. He didn't necessarily say he could see it coming, but now that it's kind of like a hindsight thing of there were a lot of signs that kind of said that they were going to lose to Michigan that day. even if like you weren't thinking about it. And you probably weren't thinking about it because you just wiped Michigan State off the floor 6 days earlier. So obviously you're riding on a high going into a situation like that. But it seems like that loss to Michigan was almost like a reset for everybody in the program, not just for the players, for the coaches and all the support staff and everything else. And that's also where I asked about JT, coming in and being what he was. But that's the biggest takeaway from that portion of it, as far as the toughness factor that we've talked about and the leadership from a program standpoint. They lost 42-27 to Michigan, and it was pretty embarrassing, and everybody had to kind of reset some things here.
Couple little logistical things that you guys probably, by the time you're listening to this, have heard about, you've read somewhere. There was a post on Cleveland.com on Friday. Marcus Crowley is done playing football at Ohio State. Tony Alford said he had another injury this spring. He'd had an injury last fall. He tore his ACL his freshman year. Just terrible luck for Marcus Crowley. So when you have that situation, you retain your scholarship to stay at school, and you can be around the program. And Ryan Day confirmed all this stuff. You can be around the program. You get your schooling paid for. You just don't count against the 85 scholarship count, and you can't play in games anymore. So that's what the situation is with Marcus Crowley. Just really unfortunate luck. He's out of Jacksonville in the class of 2019. And then Mitchell Melton, who we had talked about a lot this spring as a guy moving from linebacker to defensive end as a candidate for that jack spot, hurt in the spring game. Ryan Day said it's an ACL, and that's probably it for the year for him. Mm-hmm. So Mitchell Melton, class of 2020, missed last year with an injury, now is going to miss with an ACL this year. So that's two major injury news, one ending a career, one ending a season. Ryan Day said they're at 85 on the scholarship count. I updated it at Cleveland.com. Without Crowley, I think they're actually at 84 by what we have, and that's counting all three kickers on scholarship. Yeah. Noah Ruggles, Jake Seibert, and Parker Lewis, the transfer in from USC. Even with three kickers, that's only 84 for me, but Ryan Day said probably done in and out. They're not expecting any more transfers either way. He's okay with how the transfer things have gone. And some, right as he was leaving, he said, like, someone said, like, do you have enough kicker, or like, how many kickers are on scholarship? And he said, like, I don't know, enough or something. Like, he was, but as far as we know, Parker Fleming, the special teams coach, was also out. And Ryan Day confirmed this. All good with Noah Ruggles. So if anybody, like, Noah Ruggles wasn't around this spring, like, excused absence, you know what you're doing, you don't have to be here. And then they brought in a transfer from USC who had been USC's kicker. And it might make you think, is something going on with Noah Ruggles? That is not the indication.
No.
Full steam ahead with Noah Ruggles. They just have the space, and they're kind of getting ready, I think, for when Noah Ruggles is gone. And this Parker Lewis guy just sort of presented himself because he wasn't happy at USC. So I guess they just took him.
Yeah, I think Parker Lewis has like 2 or 3 years left of eligibility, plus like the COVID year. So, I mean, you have the space. You just added an extra kicker. They can't talk about him on the record yet because he's technically not enrolled in school. So because the summer sessions haven't started yet. So we'll actually get to ask Parker Fleming about him when we talk to him this fall.
So that's kind of the update from just a logistical point of putting the roster together. I don't think there's any other player stuff that jumped out to me that I was like, oh, we need to make sure we talk about this. We hope you guys got something out of that. Some hearty football talk. Steven and I, we certainly enjoyed doing it. We'll be writing about this stuff at cleveland.com/OSU. I have a few more things I think I'll text about over the course of the weekend. By the time you listen to this, maybe you got them. But again, this is a good time. There's stuff like this that pops up to be a text subscriber. Football stuff, recruiting stuff, basketball stuff. It's all available for $3.99 a month at 614-350-3315. For Steven Means, I'm Doug LaMaurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.